What's going on, everybody? Welcome to episode 36 of Beyond the Fourth Wall of Writing. I am your host, Skerritz. This is the recording of a live show conducted with DJ Ben Hameen talking about his debut graphic novel, Jimi Hendrix Purple Haze. Please do enjoy. Thank you. What's going on, everybody? Welcome to Beyond the Fourth Wall of Writing Podcast. I'm your host, Sean Robinson the Fourth. And with me today is Mr. DJ Ben Hameen. What's going on?
What's good, y'all? How y'all been today?
What's going on? So this is our first time doing the show live. So typically I record episodes on the back end, and sometimes you guys see a little bit of footage here and there because we do everything on video on the back end, but usually it's all audio on the front end and it's not live. But this is our first time doing the show live. And what I want to do is I want to focus in on the comic community. So it's the opportunity for the audience to be able to engage with creators basically live. You leave comments, any questions or whatnot you have during the show, you can ask that live. And but yeah, other than that, it'll be just like the regular podcast. So we're gonna get right into it. So hopefully DJ Ben, you're ready for some questions.
Yeah, definitely. I'm always you know, I'm doing more interviews as this book is getting ready to come out, and it's interesting to me because I'm usually interviewing people. So I'm
absolutely
being interviewed. So, but I enjoy being interviewed. So,
right, absolutely. So, I'll give my little bit. So, I've known DJ Bammy for a while online through the interweb. So, it's been a minute, like years and years at this point. I mean, mm-hmm. You know, I was over on Twitter first, and I think that's where we started connecting and whatnot. And I actually connected over the For All Nerds podcast. So, mm-hmm. So I'm gonna shout out to that, of course.
Yes,
still. No gas up. Still my favorite podcast. Like,
oh, thank you.
yeah.
Barnard. That's wild. Thank you. We got to get some interviews and stuff popping for the studio. Where I feel like we have a oh Jesus. God.
Oh, no. Lightsaber.
Yeah.
See, that's what they say about the lightsabers, man. You get a lightsaber, start cutting off limbs.
I saved a lightsaber, but I definitely busted something else right there. So,
Uh-oh.
Yeah. Things happen. Oh, well. But yeah, For All Nerds show, yeah, where we bust lightsabers off our walls and things of that nature. So yeah, we shout out to my partner Tatiana King, and if everybody listening and watching, make sure you go and follow and subscribe For All Nerds on all platforms, YouTube, plus all the audio platforms out there. We are a podcast dedicated to geek and pop culture from the perspective of people of color.
Absolutely. It's always live. I love watching the show, love listening to the show. So yeah, definitely go check out it. It's huge. but aside from that, obviously you see the DJ before his name, so you know this man is he's a music man, and that's also should be probably obvious by the title of this book that's coming out. I'm excited to get into talking about that a little bit, because there's a lot. I have questions. You know what I mean? I saw the little tagline. I saw the little description, and I'm like, now I'm intrigued. So
that's good. I'm glad that it had that effect on people, because
absolutely. So the book is called Jimi Hendrix Purple. Is it just Hendrix Purple Haze, or is it?
No, it's Jimi Hendrix Purple Haze.
Jimi Hendrix Purple Haze. So I'm excited to see what's going on with that. And so like before we get into the book directly again, mm-hmm. we like to talk about the creative process. So we want to get inside the mental of DJ Ben Hameen and what that process looks like. So, I mean, before we even start talking about things like outlining and writing process and all that stuff, what is your ideal setting? Like, what do you need? Are you like, oh, I gotta write at home, or I gotta go to a coffee shop, or do you have like any like things you do on a regular basis? I used to brew tea. Whenever I smell that peppermint, I know it's
not
right, you know? So do you have any mantras or anything like that gets you kind of in the writing?
I'm definitely a coffee addict, and I smoke a copious amount of marijuana.
So that's a word.
Those are pretty much my two writing things. I do a lot of my writing at home. I have this room where I'm in right now in my apartment where it's like dedicated to pretty much all my creative stuff. Like I'm standing above my turntables as I speak, and then right over here I have another little desk where I sit and write at. So that's pretty much my little table. It's got my Galactus figure on it and a bunch of other little Marvel Legends to keep me hype.
Right.
And that's really where I wrote. Well, it was actually in this corner over here when I wrote Hendrix, but fuck yeah, I wrote that bitch right there.
yeah,
that's crazy. I just thought about that. I've gone to coffee shops and shit, but I get too distracted doing that, man. I like to just be at home, crank that shit out, you know, and then I can play some video games in between. That's pretty much my routine, you know, like write a few pages, play a round of Overwatch, write a few pages, play a round of Overwatch.
Right.
When I'm knocking something out.
The word. Oh, yeah, it's good to hear. Like, see, everybody's got a different process. And everybody, you know, a lot of people, a lot of times also have music involved in the process too. Now, I know you being a music head, I don't know, does music play into it at all? Or
I'm always inspired by other people's processes like that too. Like a favorite of mine is like Kieran Gillen, and he always has like playlists for his different projects. So I wanted to do that for this one. And just to get into the mindset, really, I was listening to a lot of Hendrix, obviously, but then I just started listening to a lot of black rock from different eras, you know, like just anyone. I'd have to pull up the list of artists that I have, but just listening to a lot of different black musical artists who would be like rock, funk, from anyone from, I mean, you know, even people who wouldn't be considered stuff like that, like D'Angelo to Parliament Funkadelic to just a lot of different people. I'll pull up the list so I could tell you some of them in a second. But yeah, just a lot of different shit like that.
Yeah. And honestly, that's a fan favorite. Like, if the fan favorite is, yo, what's the playlist to this? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, that's why I did it, because I wanted to. Okay, and I had like Sting, Quentin Rock, Hannah Jagadu, Black Hippie, who I was really fucking with on this. Well, I like Black Hippie a lot. The song "If You Feel Alone at Parties," I kept playing during this. Blood Orange, of course, King Curtis, Rufus Thomas, King Floyd, another Black Hippie joint. This group who I really was, I've been banging them enough too. They're coming to a show, Krangbin. I'm never sure how to actually pronounce the name. They did an album with Leon Bridges that's really crazy.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's I mean, I'll be the first person. And you give me a name, I will guarantee I will mess that name up the first time I say it.
Oh, you know me, I'm the butcher of names. Duran Jones, who I'd been fucking with for a few years, I actually bought his vinyl, and he's got a couple of dope albums. Steen, and then Jimmy, and that was a lot of Rage Against the Machine, who I really became a massive fan of as I was during the time that I created this book, because I wasn't really a fan of them at all really growing up. I just skipped over them, and I got to see them live about 2 years ago, and it was one of them like, oh my God moment. So
life again.
Yeah, life changes. Mm-hmm. I just became an addict, and I was just playing to live life.
Absolutely. Yeah, man. I honestly, I'm like that with a lot of music. I'm like that with a lot of stuff. Movies, music, TV stuff. People are like, wait, you ain't heard that yet? I'm like, look, I don't know, man. I don't know what happened.
Yeah, and with music, I listen to so much different stuff. Like, it's especially now that it's like, I won't remember a lot of names of people until I've just blasted the life out of them, because I have so much older stuff that I grew up listening to that I'm like, you know, like, but like people like Blood Orange have become one of my favorites over the last, that's like 10 years, I think. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, so like, obviously, like, I love the idea of like, I think music plays into writing in a major way. Like, I mean, if you listen to the episode where I talked to Brian Hill, who also, he does music. I believe he plays piano. I want to play guitar. I don't want to butcher which instruments he plays, but he talked about the process. That man is like very cerebral, like a very elusive, like thematic way of thinking about the writing process. And sometimes it just puts you kind of in the right place. You know what I mean? And sometimes I feel like if I don't have the right music, I can't really get into the scene of what I'm writing. So I have like playlists for projects and then playlists for different types of whatever the like what's going on. Like if there's rising action, I have like a rising action playlist. If there's like an inspirational moment, I have that kind of a thing.
Oh, that's dope.
Yeah.
I need to do more of that. That's a very great idea.
Yeah, and it's an interesting process. But I'm a little bit different though, because I can't have words. If there's words in the music, I start to get
A lot of this, a lot of this playlist has a lot of words on it, and I would listen to it pretty much before I was writing, but I wouldn't. Yeah, same. When I'm writing, I have a whole other playlist that's more like just instrumental beats, and that's when I just play a lot of hip hop shit, a lot of Dilla, a lot of producers that I like, because I'm also a producer, so it's like I'm doing two jobs at once. I'm like, okay, I can listen to tracks, and then I can also, right. So
right, exactly.
Yeah.
You ever had the issue of I guess it's the same side of your brain being creative with writing and music. You ever clash where you're writing, you're listening to music, and then your music brain starts working, you want to go work on music, or vice versa?
It hasn't come up that much lately, because because the producing and writing at the same time only happened during this project. So
okay, yeah,
this was the first time where I was actually producing and writing, and that even happened. But this is a long process, as we'll get into. So I started producing about a year and change ago. And by that point, we were wrapping up. No, it feels a little longer than that, because I did a Hendrix remix while working on this. I was working on some shit too.
That's
so
cool. That's cool.
Yeah. So no, I would say not yet. I'm more make the time for both,
Yeah, I got you.
Attempt to do. Yeah.
Word. So you mentioned a couple years ago you started Rage Against the Machine. I'm kind of curious, what is that? That's around when you started this project, right?
I was actually looking at an email today when I emailed Tom Mandrake for the first time, who's the artist on the book. And the first time I emailed Tom was July 2022.
Okay.
Or May 2022, I think it was. But I was like, damn, it should be 2 years. And by then, we'd already, I think we started writing. So it's about 2 years, a little over 2 years or so.
Okay.
I want to say.
Word. So how did the, that's the next big question. How did the idea form up, and how did the idea specifically to go for Hendrix, how did that come into to fruition?
Okay. Well, it started with my partner, Mellow Marketer, Mellow Brown, who I've known for, we going on 20 years now. And me and him have been writing partners for about that long as well. And we both worked on American Gods together. We both came into the room together, both started pretty much in Hollywood together. And Mellow has continued and, done all kinds of different things and is popping and doing this and that. And at the same time, he started writing a Blade Runner comic book for Titan. He wrote Blade Runner Origins, which is a fire-ass book. Y'all should check it out. Mm-hmm. He made a canon where the first Blade Runner is a black man, and he went into all that and what that means for a black man to basically be a slave catcher and all those type of things. So it's a very ill-ass book. I really love it. And he wrote that for this company, Titan Publishing, and Titan also had the rights to and had been working on this Jimi Hendrix comic book for a graphic novel, whatever it was going to be in the end, for a minute. And so they came to Mello after he had some success for Blade Runner and was like, yo, would you like to write this, Hendrix, or would you like to actually just pitch? So that's how it should start. You're not going to, not guaranteed anything. It was obviously.
Exactly.
So they said, would you like to pitch for it? And he came to me because, like I said, we've worked on various projects together, and he knew I knew music, and he knew this would basically be right up my alley. And it's really amazing because Jimi Hendrix has been in my life, and I played him in a school film when I was at Howard University.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So he's been circling around in my life for a long time. And that film was really significant in my life just for various reasons. It wasn't a big film or anything, but it was very mindful to me.
Personally impactful, right?
Oh, super. Yeah, super. So
exactly.
Because of that, I you know, it's just always been around. So he hits me up one day and he's like, yo, would you want to pitch on this Hendrix book we're working on? And
I'm like, right.
That's weird, but hell yeah. Like, yeah, fuck
yeah. It's almost you were born to do this, right?
Yeah, there's those things. Yeah, serendipity and all that. And
right.
And everything. Exactly. And just, you know, happen as they should. So I was like, yes, you know, I would like to do that. Mm-hmm. And then from there, this is where the story gets interesting to me, at least. It's like, they had this idea of, they didn't want it to be a straight biography. They wanted it to be, have a science fiction twist to it, some mm-hmm. type of sci-fi twist to it.
Right.
Now, this is where I don't really freaking know how, you know, like where, how we got, I know one thing was like, and some of the art, like, this, all right, first of all, even the pitch was like a long process. We had to pitch to Janie Hendrix, who is Jimmy's sister, and she runs the estate. And this was all through, you know, the Hendrix estate. And that's a lot. Like, it takes a lot, you know, to work with them. They do a lot of checking and a lot of, like, you know, they want everything represented right. So,
exactly. Yeah.
Two of my big things that I think, I kept talking, first I told Mello, this was like, I want that imagery that we normally associate with white rock and roll and white heavy metal. I want that in this book. Like, I want big ass images that you would see on the side of a van. You know what I mean? Like the airbrush images, you know, the black light images, that type of shit. You know, I want that heavy metal iconography to be back to the source, you know, because I consider Jimi Hendrix to be the greatest, if not, you know, one or two of mm-hmm. the greatest guitarists of all time. And the centerpiece of everything, you know, if you talk about Rage Against the Machine, if you talk about Metallica, if you talk about Nirvana, if you talk about anyone, you're talking about shit he did. You know?
Right. That's the roots right there.
Yeah, he laid down everything that people did afterwards, you know, for mm-hmm. everything. I mean, back to, like I was saying, like D'Angelo credits the Band of Gypsies albums, you know, George Clinton credits that album. So many different people credit that joint, you mm-hmm. know, and that album was an album. It's central to our story, and it was central to my life again, because one of my uncles gave me that vinyl back in the day. And so that was like the first Hendrix album that I had.
Wow.
And that's the one that people consider like the, I think the word is like progenitor of funk, you know, it's like where mm-hmm. funk mm-hmm. starts to coalesce and shit.
Exactly.
So on that album. So once again, that was something, and that was something that Mello loved. And so, you know, it's like me and him are like kind of, we just have this unimind type thing going on. You know, it's like he was like, yo, I want to do this band, I want to send it on the Band of Gypsies. And I'm like, nigga, I want to send it on the Band of Gypsies.
Right. No, it just doesn't stink, right?
Yeah, but I was like, the pitch right there was like I wanted it to have that, you know, imagery, and then I wanted Jimmy to be, you know, like I just saw Rolling Stones list where he was number one, and I'm like, that needs to always be the case, and I don't ever want that to be a question. And then I want people to know that he is black above all. In fact, I just did Drunk Black History, and I was talking to them about it. And Mello, I was asking him, what did he want me to say on that? And he's like, I don't give a shit what you say, as long as you say that Jimmy is the blackest there was, and knew that, and that's what he represented, and that's what he wanted to be known as. And so that's what I say on every podcast that I do. And that was one of our big pitches to the people, to Janie and to everyone, was that we wanted him to be black, and we wanted his book to be black as hell. I told her that I grew up on Prince, and Prince to me was like the greatest ever. But if it's not Prince, it's Jimmy. And so I wanted that to be known, and that type of thing. And so that's where we basically started from. And then it gets flipped into this sci-fi shit.
Right. Yeah. And that was going to be the next big question. Also, quick aside.
Yep.
My kids, they scream to play. That's how they play. So
oh, I don't hear
like kids in the background.
Okay.
that's what they do.
As they should.
exactly. But yeah, no. I was about to ask, like, well, I still want to ask it, but I was about to ask, like, how it feels to write. So one of my most feared things in writing, one of my most feared, I just talked to Joe Illich about this particular thing, because he just did a historical book, or he's working on a historical book as well. A few historical books.
Yeah, he got a new book from Image that I'm really like, yo, come on, man. Let me know.
Right, yeah, exactly.
I haven't hit him on the low to ask. It's like, I'll just wait for that.
Right. Yeah. He's coming out the cut with a lot of stuff.
Love it.
But one of my biggest fears is history writing. Like anything that has to deal with any real history or any real person in history. I'm like afraid of that, because I'm like, man, I'm scared I'm not going to get it right. Somebody's going to call some small detail out, this, that, and the third. But then hearing you talk about this process, again, you're the perfect person for Jimi Hendrix, because it's like, man, you're like one of your biggest inspirations. It sounds like your biggest inspiration, to be honest. You played him when you were in school. Then you had of course, we got started, you know, your boy already knew. He was like, okay, that's the one right there to go get for this. And then, of course, you start going through the process, and then here comes the fear factor that I'm feeling. I'm like, oh, now you got to talk to the estate, talk to the sister, make sure that all the details are right. So I want to know from your perspective, did you have any anxieties, fears, apprehensions there? Or did you feel that, and honestly, it could just be you feel like, man, I'm the man for this because I know Hendrix, like, or I feel like I know Hendrix like that. How was that process for you?
Yeah, nah, man. And I did not feel like I was born to do. Like I said, I feel like certain things in my life just happen, you know, and I feel like I'm usually in the right place at the right time. That's what I always say, you know, I just have a knack for doing that and putting myself in these places where things were already should be. But I still had every fear. I mean, one, like you said, we had to pitch to Janie, and we had to go through a lot with Janie, and it was a whole long process. And she's very sweet, but she's also very much, you know, she wants her brother to be represented a certain way. And I fully, for the most part, agree with most of the ways that she feels about that, you know, because she doesn't want certain things to be portrayed and doesn't want him to be associated with certain things that he's historically been associated with,
right,
such as like drugs and women and all that. And I was like, at first I was like, ah, it's kind of weird, but then I got it. You know, I'm like, nah, okay, I get it, you know.
Yeah.
So because once I got through with that and stuff, the other side of it is the anticipation and excitement and the fear that comes with that of people actually reading it, for a multitude of reasons. Because one, it's my first published like comic book, you know, I've ever done, you know, that still feels weird to me. I feel like I have other comics, you know, but I don't. And so it's like, this is my first joint. And so there's that side of it. And then there is the Hendrix side of it, which I noticed during the reach, a lot of people who aren't comic readers, or who, even if they are, they're going to be a whole different side of it, who come from a fandom. And I am not that, you know, like Hendrix encyclopedia where I can just rattle off shit. Like, I did my research. I knew what I knew, and I knew what I wanted to talk about. And then when I did my research, a lot of it coincided with what Hendrix represented and what he wanted to be known for and what he was talking about. So I was like, okay, we can work this and work that. And then, you know, a lot of it is things that, there are things about it that I feel that, like you said, it's just part of, it's been my whole life, because there's actually things that I talk about, that we talk about in this book, that are like theories and ideas that I've had my whole life about Black music.
Right.
And like I was telling someone the other day, it's like, it's about Hendrix, but it's more so about Black music to me, and Black people and Afrofuturism and all that type of thing. And it's that the theories and ideas that I've had about Black music are just all in this motherfucker. You know, it was just it was like when we were working on American Gods, like the season we worked on never actually came to fruition, but it was that same type of thing where a lot of the ideas that we were pushing, that me and Mello pitched to Brian and Michael for that season, were things that we thought about our whole lives. You know, it was like spirituality themes and things that I thought about with God and faith and all that. So that was things that I was like, okay, here's my chance to, you know, talk about all this shit that I've had in my head my whole life, you know? When you know, he came in me with this, that was my immediate, I was like, oh, great. I can just talk all this shit that I've had about music in my head for my whole life, you know?
Yeah, and I see, and I love that you think about like the process of writing like that. Like you approach a story, and you kind of got the mindset, this is my opportunity to talk about what feels real to me. And I feel like that's very real writing. You know what I mean? Mm. I feel like it's very honest. I feel like it's very authentic. And one thing somebody will point out in writing, a fan, an audience member, a reader, whatever, will point out in writing really quick is if it doesn't feel authentic. Like, oh, what is this? It's just some guy shooting some aliens. I don't, okay? Like, if you don't feel like there's some substance or something to it, and you already go in before you even, whatever project you have, you already go in with, oh, I'm going to talk about these things that feel real to me. And those things are to me, at least, those themes and powerful themes like that are what make that. That's what resonates with people. That's that thing when somebody watches your show or reads your book or reads your comic and they go, yo, this hit a certain kind of way. And I'm not sure why this hit a certain kind of way, but this definitely hit me. There's something here that, you know, that's why theme is so like elusive but powerful at the same time. You know what I mean?
And it's definitely very interesting because this is one of those creations and the creative process where I've even hit metal and be like, yo, what, how do we actually start this? And how do we, because I'm like, this was so dope. You know, like I really enjoyed how we came up with this. And I'm like, how do we do that again? You know, and what was it, you know, so I can do this on my next project because,
right.
Yeah, it like you said, it's very elusive, and it's something that I can't say that all my writing has had. You know, I've had mm-hmm. projects where I've written, you know, scripts and shit, and it's been like, this ain't got no theme, this ain't meaning nothing. This is I'm trying to, you know, get a job, and
right.
you know, I'm desperate. I'm just trying to finish another script, and it's like mm-hmm. when I read it afterwards, it doesn't have that. And while this is, like I said, I have that fear and anticipation because it's my first project, and it's like, oh my God, yeah, it's like.
Mm.
But I definitely am like, nah, man, motherfuckers need to read this,
right?
You know,
and when you read this stuff, and when you look back at your stuff, and you can, and especially, so you're gonna be your worst critic, like whoever you are, you're gonna your worst critic always. You know what I mean? You're gonna especially if you're honest about your writing, and you.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I could tell you're very honest about your writing. So if you're gonna be your own worst critic. And if you look at your stuff, you're like, no, there's something here that people are gonna resonate with. The people are definitely gonna resonate with this. So I mean, I'm excited to read it just from that alone. You know what I mean? And Jimi Hendrix is a even when you hear the name Hendrix, that's just a person that you. They have, like, that's a soul person. Like, there's something in the Jimi Hendrix name that hits your soul. Like, and then you hear music and you're like, oh, no, this guy had thoughts and he knew how to express them through music. You know what I mean? So so if you're writing about this person this powerful in terms of evoking emotion, then, you know, that's going to show on the page for sure.
It's still mind-blowing to me. Like, the other day, I think because now I've posted about it and have the hashtag, so you know Hendrix videos will come up in my explore page on Instagram. And so this one came up the other day, and it's him talking to the Tall Trolls, and he's like, you're the greatest guitarist of all time. And he's just like, I'm not. And even I read this one of his autobiographies where it was collected notes, letters, things of that nature from him, so a lot of it was written in his voice. And he talked about that constantly, like he was very self-deprecating, he was a jokester. He would talk about other musicians and sometimes he would clown my shit, but he'd also be respectful. But he was very much not like, I'm the dog, you know?
Right.
When he was doing dog shit, he was just like, yeah, I'm, you know, I'm nice, you know, I'm cool, you know, I'm just working at it, you know, that type of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's still really mind-blowing to me, honestly, like the fact that I talked to his sister, the fact that this, you know, that we pitched it and they accepted it. I mean, through every iteration, through every notes, I was bugging, man. I was, and then there's stuff in the book that I was like, I'm like, I had this character, and I'm not saying no more because I just want people to see it, but I had a character, and I was like, does that exist? Has somebody done that? And then I Googled it, and nobody had done it. And I was like, oh, okay, I don't see that character out there yet. And it's in my head. So we're doing this, you know? And so then I wrote it into the script, and no one said anything. And that was like, you know, Mello laughed at it, you know, and he was like, all right, whatever, you know, but he was like, go for it, you know, and then no one else mentioned it, you know, and so I was like, oh, wow, they're going to let me get away with that one. And then it came up, and then I saw the pages, and there that character is, and I'm like, just as I imagined it, there they are in all their glory, and no one said anything, and, you know, we're off to presses as far as I know. It's still in there, yeah.
Right, right, right. And there's something, man, there's something powerful about, this is your first, something powerful about seeing, like, the characters that you wrote that were in your head, that you wrote in a script, and then you see the first pencils and inks of them, and you're just like, wow.
Oh, man.
How was that feeling for you?
this is the first time, bro. And, like, this is, like, Mello, you know, he's had a few shows that he's written that have been produced now, so he's seen actors say his words and that type of thing. Mm-hmm. I still haven't done that. You know, I've written a bunch of scripts that, you know, been through various processes and gotten this close and didn't make it, you know, to screen and all that. So this is the first one, and I've seen it, you know, like,
right.
I don't count, because of my experiences in Hollywood, I don't count anything until it's in my hands. So until the book is in my hands, I won't say it's out yet. But, you know, I've seen the whole process, man. And that's, I mean, we definitely got to talk about that. It's like, Tom Mandrake is the artist. And this one of those things, like, when I first got Tom had been working on this book since before us, because there were several iterations of it. It just didn't work out, but he was always the artist that they had.
Right.
You know? And so when we came on board, they were like, we've got Tom Mandrake and we want you to pitch it. And they sent us this one image that he'd done of Jimmy. And I was like, oh, that's a fire image. But I didn't honestly, and I told Tom this, I didn't know his name like that. Like, I grew up a huge Marvel head, and I read DC sparingly. And when I was coming up, Tom was heavy DC. He was doing Suicide Squad. He was doing the Spectre. And he might have had, you know, a couple of Marvel things here and there, but he was mainly DC. And even when I was reading DC, I just missed his ish. So I just didn't really know his name, like, nothing. So I Googled him, and I'm like, oh, dude, this dude can really
that rap sheet.
Crawl. Like, yeah, that was the first time. I'm like, okay, he got a rap sheet. And then he can fucking, like, because I grew up on, like, you know, the classical cats, like the Neil Adams, and that's, you know, I'm mentoring Neil Adams. Like, he, you know, that's that same line of thought, you know, of fully illustrated scenes and just angles and just all this work that, you know, like, a lot of people don't do, honestly. And
right, yeah, yeah.
It's hard work, you know. He's one of them technically skilled, classically trained artists.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm seeing this one, I'm looking at this, I'm like, oh, this real. but then I start talking to people, you know, like Joe Illidge. And I think Joe might have been the first person I told. And Joe's jaw dropped when I told him that Tom Mandrake was doing it. And I told on my man's Isaac Goodhart, another incredible artist. Mm-hmm. And Isaac was like, you know, eyes both not like Tom. You know, and then I told Dimitri at anyone, and he's like, yo, Tom barely has anything. And he sold me the last book that Tom had done, you know, which is this graphic novel. I love it too. It's this Western joint with horror. Oh, God, the name is stipping me right now. Hell. I can't remember.
It'll come back around.
Yeah. Because it's about something about we ride to hell or something, but I can't remember. Dope book. But so I'm looking through all this stuff, and then I start, you know, doing a little more research where I start looking at Tom's art from, like, I think it was a page from the Spectre or something that came up, and it was all these black people in the hood in the 90s, and he had them all looking black as hell, but different black people and not caricatures of black people. Like, this is the 90s, so man's had dude with the Gumby, you know, with the Gumby flat top. And, you know, the three parts of his eyebrows, like Kane and shit, you know? So I'm like, oh, this man gets, you know, he gets it. Like, I'm not even going to talk to him about, yo, I need this to be black. He gets it. You know, Tom Mandrake is like a 60-something-year-old white man. You know, he gets it, you know? And so that was one of our first conversations. I told him, I was like, okay, I don't need to talk to you about that. I looked at your stuff. You get it, da-da-da-da. And then me and him, once again, we had some of the same viewpoints, like, about how music is depicted in comics and things of that nature. We just didn't want to do it the traditional ways.
Oh, that's a big one.
Oh.
Music on the page. Yeah. especially after I saw, so I saw some like, well, I don't, I think I saw like maybe you had some interior pages that were.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I think I remember seeing the coloring on that too.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Justin Polkovich.
Yeah.
I was Justin.
Yeah. This is going to be live. Like that's what I was thinking. The word live was what was stuck in my head when I saw those.
Oh my God, man. There's an opening. We haven't shown it yet. There's an opening 2-page spread. I've been talking about it for months now. Of Hendrix performing that is like, there's like, you know, maybe at most a paragraph of strip to describe this scene, and Tom just did, you know, the thing, and then Justin comes in with this wash for colors where it's like, mm-hmm. And then the way it draws your attention to Hendrix on stage is just,
wow,
man, you know, it's like both of these cats are masters of what they're doing, and I, you know, I just have to keep talking about, you know, and bigging them up because they both got it, you know, and that was, right. That was the biggest thing. And it was like you're talking about the music depicted on page. That was another thing I did a lot of research into, because I was just like, okay, how can we do this and possibly do it, if not in a way that people hadn't seen, just, you know, something different and something interesting. So
right.
Tom already had his ideas for it and I loved it. And so I was like, you know, let's lean into that. And mm-hmm. We both just didn't want to see squiggly musical notes.
Yeah.
On the page.
Right.
That was something we were both against. And so that we both were like, no, and that's not in there at all. So.
Mm-hmm. Right. You know, that's good stuff. That's honestly, that's one of the big things I've always wondered about. Cause I mean, for a very long time, I've been thinking about like a hip hop esque book, and one of the biggest things in the back of my head, like a history, like I didn't get it in time for 50th anniversary, but I still mm-hmm. didn't eventually get it out there. And one of the biggest things I was like, man, how do you really convey music on the page? And, you know, do I want to just like put lyrics on it, like bars on the page, like four bars here and there? And what, like, how do I really want to evoke that emotion. So like, I'm excited to see,
man,
what it looks like from Hendrix.
I'm excited. I'm just excited for like people to see this shit. Cause it's like, we did a lot of weird, interesting things with that. And mm-hmm. I did a lot of research. I've read as many, you know, books about music. I will shout out this one, because we were so different, but I just think they fucking killed it and people will never believe it. So there's a Jim and the Rockstars comic book from a few years back
mm-hmm.
that is incredible.
Okay.
Like, good. You know, it's from the Jim, from the old cartoon, but it's like every time, like every song they play, like when they do a sad song, you could just look at the page and it's like, oh, this is
the
saddest song of all time. You know,
the colors and the
colors, the way the lyrics, the way things are just like everybody's melting or things right. of that nature. And then when it's them rocking out, you know, it's like this is a pure rock out.
Right.
And then another thing that I saw recently, and I'm glad, well, I don't know. I actually hit metal afterwards, and after I watched it, I was like, yo, dude, did we come close to this? It was is the anime film of Blue Giant from last year. And it's about jazz music. Yeah. And it is, it's just like, to me, the best thing I've wanted to get. Yeah, it's unavailable in the States right now. You know, I got to see a screening of it, but I'm just praying, you know, I need it to get released. I don't give a damn what, because it's, oh my God, y'all. It's just one of the best things I've ever seen about music. And it's a great story in general, but the way they show and capture music and the feeling of music
mm-hmm.
is, it's damn near perfection. And that's why, like, I hit Mello after that. Like, yo, did we come close to this? Please tell me we come, you know, I don't know, you know, but, you know, we did what we did, so.
Right. Yeah. Man, I'm telling you, man, you got me excited for this. Like the process and what I'm hearing from the process too, it sounds very like so comics can sometimes be very technical. Like it could be really like, okay, I go in, I do my script, I write, you know, I make sure that I only have 23 words per panel, or you know, or I don't go over 100 words per page, and I have 6 panels per page, and then I give it to the person, and then the editor says, no, you can't do this, and then edit this, and then I give it to, and then it's just done, right? But this process is like, from what I'm hearing from how you guys did this comic, there was a lot of back and forth and a lot of discussion, even but probably before the script even happened, right?
Oh yeah. That's the thing. Me and Mello, like Mello lives in LA, so we would schedule Zoom calls, and you know, we started this I think even during pandemic or like towards the end of the pandemic, right? So we'd be in the crib, and you know, me and Mello, like I said, we're like brothers, so we will talk. We'll have a Zoom call that goes on for like 3 hours, and then maybe 45 minutes of that is actual talking about the book. Right. You know, because for 2.5 hours, we are just talking about anything and everything else. You know, every movie we've seen, every comic we read in,
right.
You know, our lives, or, you know, just everything. And then we'll be like, oh, yeah, we got to write this book.
So, yeah.
You know, let's figure this out. And so that's how all the calls went every time, no matter what stage of it we were in. And yeah, there was a lot of back and forth. And then again, like, it's interesting to me, like, listening to you say that, like, when you're like the 100 words per page and, because that, like, shit like that, I was so fearful of, and I come to this from writing film scripts. So it's like there are certain rules for film and TV, like,
right, yeah.
And that way, and this, and the main rule, I mean, the one I was about to mention is something that really applies across all mediums, is you want to end on a cliffhanger, no matter, you know, every page, what, you know, a page turner. So I knew that much. So I was like, but then I'd hear people, I remember, I think it was Vita and Steph, I can't remember, I think it was Vita was talking about it.
Right.
And they were talking about how they hate the middle of the book because, you know, when you have that last panel, it's like down in the crease, you know, kind of, and it's hard to see. And honestly, I wasn't thinking about no shit like that. And like, the panel idea was, that was a bit hard for me to get my mind around at first, because I'm like, well, how many panels do I need? You know, and
yeah, and then you're even pages. So depending on how the book is printed, you got your first pages on the right, and then your even pages on the left, and you're trying to figure out, okay, what can people see on the other page already if they have the book open? You know what I mean?
So, that type of stuff I thought about in certain ways, but then like I was more thinking about like, okay, I start how the book starts is there's a first page, and I was like, and I wanted it to be this big splash right away, and Mello was like, no, you got to earn that, you know, like, let's get into this, you know, the panels and then the splash, you know, so it's like,
right,
it's this first page, but I think for that one, I don't know, because I had this idea, and I'm not going to say where my inspiration comes from, because people can figure it out or not, but I was definitely inspired by something else, and I was like, okay, I'm going to redo that kind of. So right. That's the first page, is kind of redoing that. And then it's like, it opens off into this big splash page. And then after that, it's a, you know, a bunch of smaller panels. And we don't have, there's not many, it's not some Image 90s book where it's all splash pages. It's a little, you know, probably one per issue, I think. You know, it's like a four, it's a big graphic novel, but it's four acts in it. So one per act.
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah.
Maybe two. You know, maybe one at the beginning, one at the end on some acts. But not that many. It's a lot of, you know, it's a lot more compressed and a lot of storytelling in the panels and stuff. So it was more like, and then learning what Tom could do, you know, right. But the real shit with it came when I realized that I didn't need to tell Tom to do anything. You know, like when I realized that Tom could tell me what to do, you know, and that was like after I got the pencils for the, like when he sent like the, I think he sent in like the first 8 pages and I emailed him immediately, like, look, I don't care what is in our script from now on. If there's a camera angle or a panel count or something of that nature that you disagree with and you want to lay out this page like this.
Exactly.
You got it, bro. I can letter in anything after the fact, you know,
right,
not exactly. That big a deal to me. Like, you're the legend. I'm doing my first book, you know, so, you know, I'll figure it out. And he's killing it. That's other thing. So now like where right. I was like, where I'm like, oh man, I really had that panel. Like, and it's like, yeah, you know, I skip page. I'm like, oh my god! there's actually one of the pages that's out right now. There's this big 2-page spread, and that I described a certain way, and he changed the way it is. And like, it was like I had too much shit basically,
right?
And
right.
I had too many ideas for that page, so he picked and chose which of the ideas that he felt worked best.
Right.
And when I got it back, I was like, oh, that's not in there. But then it's like, oh, but look at what is in there.
Right. Exactly.
And then when I spend the time just studying all the story that's in that page, and like, I'm really happy that that page doesn't have any context to it, because it's a lot of stuff in that page. Like, God damn, if people knew what this meant, this would be a lot to, you know, put out there. But because you have no idea what it means, I it's just a beautiful piece of art pretty much. And that's why it's great. But yeah, no, back to the original question. Yeah, it was like the most it was insane getting these pages back from Tom. Like, it was just, it was unreal because, like you said, there's things. One, he's Tom Mandrake.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, there's this opening two-page spread that I compared to the Neil Adams,
mm-hmm.
Superman versus Muhammad Ali.
Superman and Muhammad
and the whole crowd is around them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the level of artistry we're talking about in this spread. Like, this spread, dog. It's in my head right now. I'm like seeing it and I'm like, oh, fuck. Look at that one character.
It's like, now I wrote these words right here. Then what? All of this is like.
All I said was, you know, Jimmy is doing this. The crowd is doing that, basically.
Right.
And I don't want to say what's happening yet. You know, that's for the people to read. But mm-hmm. Jimmy is performing. The crowd is doing this.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I said. And then it's like, there's so many little stories in this art. You know, like, this is happening over here in this corner. Then over here on the right, this is happening. And these two people are doing this. And it's all this shit. And I'm just like, God damn, fam. So.
Right.
And it's like, it's Tom Mandrake. So it's like, every page was like that, bro, where it's like, and then it was that idea where it's like, oh shit, I wrote that, you know, like.
Yeah.
And then when Tom is telling me, and that's something that I still, it just blows me away. And he was like, I have written, and the motherfucker sent me an email, so I got for real, where he was like, nah, man, you know, I'm really inspired by what you and Mello are doing, you know?
Right.
And I'm like, Tom, you have illustrated for every name you can think of. You know, like, if you could think of a name in comics, he's, you know, done their words. And so I'm like, you tell me that you're inspired by what we're writing.
Right.
And then Tom is a lifelong Hendrix fan.
Mm-hmm.
So this book was very personal to him too. So for us to, like, for him to get what we were, you know, putting down, you know, you get what I'm putting down, brother. It was really amazing because it was like, wow, you know, for someone who's a lifelong fan. So that, you know, that alleviated some of that fear and that's, you know, of like, what are the real Hendrix heads going to feel about this?
Right.
Because I can't call myself a real Hendrix head, you know. I can call myself a real black music head.
Right.
And I will represent that part of it to, you know, the end.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't say I know anything about Hendrix at all, you know. And so, but I knew Tom knew a lot of it, you know. Mm-hmm. And then I know his sister, obviously. And when this got their approval, you know, and then when it got Tom's approval, and then people who are close to me have read it and they've really loved it. And so, you know, that type of stuff. Yeah.
Well, I know that's mind blowing. That has to be mind blowing. The whole process to get everything back, man. That's huge. It's huge. It's huge.
And then it's this. And then, like, we haven't really talked about that yet. I guess we'll get into it eventually, but, you know, during this conversation. But it's like this. It's this real sci-fi shit too. You know, so it's like, it's not.
Right. Yeah.
On planet Earth, you know, doing this. It's all kind of. It was pretty much anything we could think of, and that was like, this is the first time I've ran a comic, and they always talk about that, like, comics. I always, like, I've said the name twice. Like, Kieran is, like, one of my biggest inspirations. Kieran Gillen as a writer. And
absolutely.
And he, I mean, I've told him this, you know, I've talked to him about it a lot. And he knows that, like, one thing he talks about, and I've talked a lot about it in different ways, is, like, real estate and then budget within, you know, comic. And you mentioned this before, like, you only have 22 pages,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so within those 22 pages, you have to do this, this, and this. So that takes up real estate, right? You got to tell a story. You got to, you know, be interesting. You got to do this. You got to establish your character. Dun, 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 dun. And then the thing Kieran talks about is budgeting for your artist. Where, like, what are you asking your artist to draw per page?
Right. For Mello sometimes, yeah.
Yeah, like, fam, are you going to break this man's back? And Mello was like, he likes to do something in every issue where it pushes, you know, or he breaks it. And I'm like, bro, I don't know Tom like that, you know? So I'm like,
yeah.
Tieran's words are in my head, you know, be easy on your artist, you know, don't, like, like, if you have this happen on this page, have them do another page where it's, like, easier, or, you know, have them do fun stuff when you have a bunch of, you know, boring stuff. And so with this, I was just like, well, fuck, bro, like, you know, like, I've never done this, so what if we did this, you know, and what if we did that? And it was just a constantly, like, Mm-hmm. Melo will be like, bro, we can't, you know, either Melo will be like, we can't do exactly that, but we can do it like that. And I'm like, all right, well, that works for me. You know, like I say, back to that idea, like the imagery that I wanted to see.
Right.
Well, we get a lot of that in there. There's a lot of, you know, just really big, powerful, weird sci-fi moments, you know,
that
I wanted to do that I think we get.
Yeah. And with, honestly, with the kind of person that, at least I picture that Jimi Hendrix was, like those, that kind of thing seems to fit with.
Oh yeah.
Story. Yeah.
He talked about it. He read about, you know, sci-fi. He talked about sci-fi. A lot of his stuff was inspired by it. So definitely. Yeah.
Right. Right. So of course, obviously everybody, every character or every main character in the story is going to have their story arc. So with all the sci-fi elements, without, you know, obviously without spoiling, you know, exactly what all the sci-fi elements are and whatnot, what's kind of Jimi Hendrix, what's his goal in this story? Like what the character arc looking like, without telling us like exactly how we get there or whatever.
Yeah. Well, the blurb that they put out, it says that it's like there's a intergalactic force that has like basically conquered the universe, and Jimi Hendrix is searching for a talisman to find a way to defeat it.
Right, right.
It's not 100% right, but it is. But I'm learning most blurbs aren't 100% right. You know, right. It's a blurb, right? It is a lot more than that. But like I said, we were really focusing around, you know, his time with the Band of Gypsies. And the Band of Gypsies is when he formed this band for one album, and he has a black bassist and a black drummer. And before that, you know, he'd done the Jimi Hendrix Experience with the other two white cats. And so then he gets this Band of Gypsies, and it felt like him really being like, you know, really establishing himself like, nah, I'm black, man. Like, you know, this is
right. Exactly. Like, yeah.
Because by that time, he's a super duper star, and they pushed him into the stratosphere. And, you know, he didn't get to do the big performance when they were doing Woodstock. He missed the performance in Harlem that he wanted to do.
Right.
Yeah. And so, you know, there's a lot of things like that. So he puts this album out with a machine gun on it, which is talking about the Vietnam War. Mm-hmm. And then They Don't Know, which is just one of my favorite Jimmy songs. And just, it's a really dark, funky, you know, but then he's got that message to love. Like,
right.
It's just a beautiful album. Mm-hmm. And it just feels like steeped in blackness and all that. And so that was like basically the journey that we take Jimmy on, is like a refinding of his musicality and a refinding of his blackness.
Oh, yeah. I like that. See, and that's so... I like that story arc because we don't know the sci-fi elements. We got all the sci-fi elements in this. So obviously there's going to be like stuff coming his way. But when the character arc I always talk about the external, the internal, right?
Mm-hmm.
But when the character arc is in any story, like we have all these external things, aliens are attacking.
Yeah.
You know,
there's an intergalactic war.
Right. Yeah. Whatever.
But basically going on.
There's a day with the real story arc is what's going on in the inside and what he wants. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I'm glad that you guys like have that kind of you have to have the focus on that. Like that's the main theme. That's what I'm hearing from you. So yeah, I mean that's pretty dope, man. Like you said, how many pages? You said it was four.
It's four. It's about 90, 91 pages, I think. 92, something like that. It clocked in somewhere around there. I'm not 100% sure, because I think we went over a couple of issues and then we're under. You know, we try to keep it on budget. So.
Right, right.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And the book itself is like going to be a 128-page graphic novel because we got a lot of, you know, back content.
Right.
You
know, yeah.
A lot of creative stuff and all that.
Right. Yeah, yeah. No, that's dope. Yeah. And so earlier you mentioned like Cal Kieran was talking about page real estate and you know, what the artist can do on a page and stuff like that. But then in addition to that, because so the book is very, obviously there's all the external factors. I mentioned the internal a second ago. There's going to be moments, of course, in the story where the character is going to be either coming to terms with something, realizing something, understanding something about himself. And then you have these pages where emotion really matters.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of curious, like how you dealt with how many panels or pages or space, how much space you give to these emotional moments that I'm sure, especially when you deal with music, and what that kind of looks like. I know you mentioned you had a couple of like big splashes and stuff like that, but obviously there's also pages where you know, there could be a lot of action with like your standard 6 to 7 panels or 5 to 7 panels. But then you might have some that are like 3 or 4 panels because there's just so much impact that those panels need to have. So I'm just kind of curious of how you went about that.
Oh, no, definitely. And that's something interesting because, like, I love it just talking about this because it's like when you mentioned, like, the standard, just whenever you start mentioning standard, that's when I'm like, there's a standard?
Yeah. I'm not a real standard.
Like, it's just because I'm like an average. I'm like, oh, somebody told me, you know, like, I've read thousands upon thousands of comics. You know, I cannot tell you, you know, how many I've read. Mm-hmm. And I've read, you know, I know a lot of writers and I've talked to writers and I've read a lot of their, you know, like essays on writing comics and stuff. But once again, this is my first comic. So it was, then Mello had written comics. So he was like, and you know, he had his script format that I know, like there's recently, I know Jocelyn was involved and some other cats for like trying to put out a standard comic book script format. That'll be more akin to like a film. When I looked at it, a little more like a film format. But right. I'll be honest, we didn't write like that. You know, our format looks nothing like a film script.
Right, exactly. And that's the thing about comics. I love about comics, like in terms of your actual script itself. Yeah. I mean, that thing could be written on toilet paper as long as artists can understand it.
It's so different. That was something I had to, because I'm used to, you know. The format is the format, you know, like
right, exactly.
You know, this point, everything, like it just they, you know, every script you ever read in Hollywood looks exactly alike, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And then it even gets into the weirdness of it where people want, you know, they're like, oh, your eyes should fall down the page, mm-hmm. you know, so don't have lines too long or just like that, you know. So it's just like you can read down the script, and I'm like, God damn, you know that.
Right, right.
That type of stuff was like, nigga, I'm already trying to have a cliffhanger on this page, and you're like, you know, I've had people tell me don't have a line where it's like duh, 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 and then one word below, you know, that character sentence either be 2 lines full or you know. Mm-hmm. They just want your eyes to easily, you know,
raise
through the fucking script. So, this was the completely different process. And then it was a lot of that. That's what I wanted to say. I have a vivid ass imagination, but what I did learn is when I'm thinking of comic books, I start thinking of like squares. Like all my panels be mad blocky, you know?
Right.
I'm like, panel 1, panel 2, panel 3, panel 4.
Right.
You know, 1, 2, 3, 4 panels on the page. Yeah, you know, blah, 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 you know? And then I start thinking of that with the classic, is it 6 panels or 8 when, you know, like the Watchmen drone when it's like people just talking, you know, talking heads.
All the back, like a 9-panel grid. Like,
yeah, the 9-panel grid, yeah, you know, which I know Karen says that's a monster and it don't do it to your artist.
Yeah.
And so I never did that. But that was, again, once, like, my first page, I straight up, like, there was 2 influences. One I'm not naming. The other, because it got obliterated, I will name. I was imagining it as Cowboy Bebop's intro.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
When, you know, it's like a black spray and then it's like a bar,
another bar.
So exactly. I was thinking, you know, that 4 panel page, okay, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4 bars, you know, boom, mm-hmm. boom, boom. And so I'm like, oh, okay, that'd be, you know.
I'm thinking of comic pages right now that I've read would have that. When Wanda said No More Mutants, they had that kind of a.
Yeah. And so. That's how I was imagining this page, you know, and that's how I wrote it. 1, 2, 3, 4 panels, you know, and I'm like, duh, 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 duh. And that was obviously, and I'll say that that's the other inspiration is that, you know, it's a 1, 2, 3, 4, you know, it's kind of all music,
right?
You know, exactly. So I was like, so that was the start off. So it's like 1, 2, 3, 4, and I'm like, and I write it, and then I get it back from Tom, and it's not like that. It ain't straight,
right?
It ain't blocks. It's 4 panels, but they're, you know, here's one over here, then another one's over here. This one is like 3/4 of the page, and then this one is over here, and it's fucking beautiful. But it's nothing like what I thought about. So again, once after that, I just kind of let go of that, and I was like, okay, well, here's what I need on this page, and here's what I think it should be. And, you know, like we'll get to those emotional pages. It was like, once again, I was more concerned with, okay, let's end a page on, you know, what note are we ending each page on?
Mm-hmm.
And during this page, did we get through that, you know, or during these 2 pages, did we get that emotion in there? And You know, that's what I was, and after that, I just let him run wild with however, you know, it was. Just like, there's some stuff in the first issue, in the first act, that is like some of my favorite. It's just one of my favorite moments. It just was so much thing that I've been thinking, like I say, when it goes back to Black music and
right
things I've been thinking about my whole life, and it's said in this first few pages of the book, and I'm like, fuck, man. Like, when I saw that shit come back, that was, it gets all that emotion, you know? Like, Tom is just a master of that shit, man.
Right.
I don't, it's to be different working with different artists, you know, in the future, but I'm definitely, I would never be that type of person. I don't know. I've also, you know, I come from directing films even before I was writing. I was a director. I went to school for directing.
Right.
And
right.
I've done a bunch of short things. So I've never been that person to tell people how to do shit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, you hire people who know how to do shit, and then you let them do it. And then you work mm-hmm. around that, is how I always feel.
Right, right. And that's so.
Yeah. I'll just let artists be artists, and then I'll script after. And then that was something, like, you know, cause we did a scripting pass and all that, and I was consciously trying to take words out as much as possible.
Oh, yeah.
As much as possible. And when I see, like, I know, like, Ta-Nehisi, that's my boy, he was talking about when he first, and I mean, he did, when, like, on the first few issues of Black Panther, they're just wordy. And I'm like, I felt bad sometimes how little words, you know, we would do. But then I'm like, well, I don't want to be Claremontian, you know, I don't want to be that type of shit. You know, I want it to be, you know, I don't want it to be sparse, but I feel like we're getting our point across. And that's all I feel like you need to do, you know. And then more than that, and, you know, that comes from that comes from, you know, film, you know, knowing that, you know, it's, especially in TV and film, it's just, it's always less is more. Less is more.
So important. Like, that is so, that's one of the things that I probably learned. The two things. So everything you just talked about are the two things that are some of the most important things to learn when you're starting comics. And when I started comics, that was one of the first things. Like, one, you're working with your artists and them being your co-creator and learning, even though it doesn't look exactly how it was in my head, like, a lot of the time, even to this day when I get pages back, a lot of the time, the pages will look dope, and I'm like, my first thought is, that doesn't look how I thought it.
Oh, God, all along, yeah.
But then I take a step back. I let it sit, because it still looks good.
Yeah,
I take a step back, and then I come back to it, and I'm like, man, this is actually probably better than anything I would have thought of it, you know? So a lot of the time, it's like, learning to let certain things go, with the page layout that was in your head, letting that go or whatnot. And then, especially for comics, the words on the page, like, that is so, like, knowing how to convey the story without dialogue where you can. If you can tell something, some part of the story without any words on it, if you can go a few pages without words, sometimes it can work depending on the type of comic it is or the type of thing that it is, you know? So, like, especially in the music, in the book about music, you know what I mean? So, yeah, that stuff right there is so powerful. And then also, with me switching over in the last 3 years or so, to lettering comics as well, I'm even more hyper-conscious about words now. Yeah. Now I'm like, I'm a slat. Can I word this to be 15 words instead of 30? I'm a reword it, you know? Mm-hmm. As long as it doesn't subvert the character's voice or whatever, I'm going to reword it so it's shorter. But yeah, all of that stuff is like, that's really getting into the weeds of the process right there. And that's the kind of stuff that you really... don't think about until you're, like, there. You know what I mean? Until you're doing it, you're like, oh, man, I gotta cut down on this. And, you know, it's like you said, it's a lot harder when people are telling you all these different, like you mentioned earlier, the top. I never heard that one. The top down and certain.
Oh, God, yeah.
I feel like the words flowing on the page, like,
yeah. No, I've heard, when it comes to how your script in Hollywood should actually physically look on the page, I've heard so many things that it's
like, oh, yeah.
Yeah. And then it's like, you'll see people get away with shit because they're established that you could never get away with. Like, I'll never forget when Michael Green told us to read Michael Clayton, the script for Michael Clayton, which starts off with just blah, blah, blah of just like a motherfucker just talking for like 3 pages. It is no dialogue. It's nothing. It is just text on the page.
Oh, my God.
And I was like, what the, Michael, if I turn this into you, you throw it in my face and laugh.
Right.
Like, what are you talking about? But it's also one of the best scripts I've ever read. Once you get through that, blah, 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 you know, and blah, blah, blah is important to every dude. So it does, you know, people who know what they're doing can take those risks and do it. I might still cut down on some of that blah, blah, blah. But, you know, whatever. It's Michael Chang. I love that movie. But, yeah, it seems like that one I just didn't know about with comics. And because of that, we just did it a certain way. And I think, you know, I think we did a good job. Once again, I'm still just waiting to see how people take this. Like, you were talking about the emotional moments. Again, there's one of the pages, another one of the pages is out there. You see Hendrix playing, and I don't want to say too much more about it, but, you know, it's a big emotional moment in the book. And that was actually, Mello wrote most of that scene, and I think he fucking killed it. And I think Tom really, you know, killed it. And then Justin, again, I got to talk about Justin and Prokovich and these colors, because like the colors we a lot, not all the time, but sometimes in the book, in our script, we were very specific because there's musical colors that we wanted associated with certain scenes, like this color for this scene and this color for another, or like, you know, this color magic type thing. And so we had this type of idea and, you know, there. So the way Justin interpreted that and, you know, put it on the page is like, it's something else. So it really was, once I really started seeing that come back, it was like, oh no, just cut these words, man. Cut all this shit. Your words are unnecessary.
Right.
Unnecessary.
Yeah, that collaborative process, man, I'm telling you, like it's really magical, honestly, especially when we have a team where you guys are in constant communication back and forth, you know what I mean? I've worked on projects where it was kind of like, give them the script and then they just give you the stuff back and it's not as much. I don't like that process as much as I like the back and forth. Like, ask me questions. You know what I mean? I'm like, ask me questions. Tell me you don't like something, please.
Yeah.
Like, if you like, come and tell me, if you're like, bro, we don't even need 6 panels here. We could do this in 3. All right, let's do it. You know what I mean? Like that's like that being open to that kind of a process is what I think makes the comic. And there's no medium like comics. Like, there's no medium like comics. It's like,
it's nothing like it. And like you said, I really want to say Justin and Gary, because me and Justin, we didn't talk as much. We emailed like once or twice at the beginning of it, and that was pretty much it. And I remember when I first got some of the colors, I actually sent me an email, and I was like, man, I don't know about it. You know, like, hey, you ain't doing like this. And then Mello's like, yo, bro, chill. Like, let this man work. You know what I mean? He's doing what he's doing. And then, you know, but it was more just like, I needed to take a step back and shut the fuck up. Because just because I have a vision of something doesn't mean that's how it should be. And, you know, if you have that iron grip on your shit, you're never going to get anything done in the world of comics. You have to be very collaborative with people, and you got to understand that you don't know everything, you know, and like, colorists' job are they're working on a level that we're not really thinking about, you know.
Right.
They're thinking about all these different things to make a scene work together, you know, and draw your eye in certain ways. And it's just like, you can't really do their job for them. Just let them do it.
Right.
And then that was the thing with Tom, a lot of times, like I said, I mentioned another scene, but there's another scene where it's like, I listed all this ill shit and he pick and choose which ill shit to put in there.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And I was like, oh man, I wanted to see that ill shit. But the way he did this ill shit is so ill that it's like, oh, I get it. And it's space, you know, that's the thing. It's like, okay, how much space does he have on this page?
Right.
Exactly. Then you're like trying to make this man, you know, throw everything into this page. And then it'd just be a jabbered mess because there's only so much space on this page. Like,
right.
So he did the damn thing with that. I tell people people are like, oh my God, this art. I'm like, y'all motherfuckers ain't seen nothing. Like, y'all ain't seen nothing. These 4 pages are nothing.
Right.
Like, I mean, one of the dopest pages is out there. I'll say that. But then there's like this, it's like, Tom is he's one of the dopest. And he feels like this is some of his best work. People who've seen it feel like this is some of his best work. And this dude is a long time living legend. So
right.
It's it's some, you know, it's some real ill shit on these pages.
Right, man. And I'm so glad, man. That's so crazy. I'm so glad that you got to work with Tom. I'm so glad you got to like pitch, like, well, to me, it sounds like a dream project doing Jimi Hendrix. You know what I mean?
I mean, it was like with anything, there's, you know, up and downs of it, obviously. But yeah, it was.
Yeah.
It's. Yeah. No, man, this is. I could never. I mean, I won't say that because I don't like that. I want to do more comics. Yeah, I was about to say I could never do another comic. I'd be happy, but
yeah.
At the same time, man, it's like I'm a type of person who likes to do a lot of different things. So I'm like, you know, if I do another comic, that'll be cool. You know, no, I want to do more comics. So,
right,
I'm going to do more comics.
Right. Like, especially you being a comic head.
Yeah, I know. I got some X-Men shit. I got to get out there, and then I want to create more shit. I'd like to do a sequel to this. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of story threads that I'd like to explore more in this universe. We really created a whole ass universe, which is the other one thing I really love about it. Like, that's another thing I really love. And it's Hendrix's story, but there's a couple other characters, Vesper and Reyna, who are these two women who have connections to him, who are creations of ours. And their arcs are just as important to me in this story. And that's what's so, I love this story so much because their arcs, we were like, okay, we need to tell, you know, it was like things that we needed to tell. And so it's like, we need to tell something that Hendrix can't tell. So we're going to tell this story through them.
Right.
And their story is so dope. And it just, it's so heart, you know, it hits me. And they're like, I want to write about them for a long time. Like they're
right. And so I'm saying, if you know something hits you, if something hits you and you feel it, you know it's going to resonate with
you. Yeah, it's just like I said, it's just, it's so interesting because it was a dream, and then it was like a dream of like the things that I talked about, that we talked about, that we wrote about, and then that we showed, and then there's this really entertaining story behind it all. And
right.
I just think it's a really dope ass graphic novel. And that's like, I'm like, I'm really hyped for people to read it. Cause I want it, you know, I want it, like, that's how I am. Like, as a DJ, I just want to rock shit. You know, like as a producer, I want to rock shit. Like, I always want to have it where people are like, yeah, you put that shit down, dog, you know?
Right. Yeah.
And so that's what I'm just like, I want people to, you know, like to read this and be like, yeah, you did your thing, you know, this is really that, absolutely. This is that book.
Yeah, and I think they will, man, yeah. And I'm glad, it's like, so you're doing this comic, so I'm glad you're officially in the comic world, you know what I mean? I'm definitely expected to see more comics in the future. I want to ask real quick, what were you watching anything or reading anything or, you know, during the process that kind of helped you along the way in terms of, not inspiration, Maybe some of it was inspiration, but just kind of like is like food you ingest to kind of get your idea, to fuel the ideas.
Well, like I said, I read his a couple of his biographies, and then like I said, the research beforehand was like, okay, Google, you know, how's music done in comics,
right?
And then read as many of those comics as I could, you know, and like see how they did it. And so that was a lot of different comics. Like I mentioned, that Jim joint. There was this other one, I cannot remember the name of it. I have it somewhere, but it's a graphic novel about, I think these aliens, these like mecha alien type things come to Earth, and this dude has to fight them off with heavy metal music.
Oh, word.
That was a cool joint I read. And then I'm always reading comics. I'm not one of those people who would be like, oh, I can't read stuff or I can't watch stuff while I'm creating because otherwise I'm gonna be inspired.
I never understood. Never understood people who said that. I can't comprehend that. And some of the reasoning is that, oh, it's gonna poison my idea, or it's going to, or I'm gonna accidentally write their stuff into my stuff. And I'm like, I have never ever run into that issue. If anything, like I'll see something that may inspire some small bit of something in my work, but I've never felt like it was gonna poison the work though. It's not that you need to recharge. That's what I kind of meant about the food. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
I know, and I'm glad to hear that other people, because I know people who are like that, and I get it when you get too busy. Like I feel over the last few years.
Yeah. Yeah.
I haven't kept up with comics like I usually do. Like it was the first time in my life where I still have comics on my shelf that I haven't read, you know, and that's so, yeah. It's just different for me because I just, you know, I got a little busy and I just don't read everything that I buy and I'll just buy it and be like, oh, I'll get to that later. And then I don't. So that's the first time that that's happened in life. And I think that happened coinciding with me writing this where I was definitely like, because there are, like I say, there's some direct homages in the book. And then there's like stuff that is like probably, everyone is influenced by other things. We're all influenced
Of course.
But I don't really feel like that we were telling some other story. Like, even when I was homaging something, it was more like I wanted to do something because, like, a lot of the things I was homaging were that idea of reappropriating themes.
Right.
Like, there's a big homage to end the book, and that's like a double-layered joke, you know, that I think only, the homage is pretty obvious if you get it, but why I did that homage is because it's some, like, give me that back, you know, but
right.
You'll have to really think about why I'm, you know, like, if
that's one of the other fun things about writing is putting obvious Easter eggs and then putting things that are real obscure. You're like, why? And then you won't know until like you do an interview like 10 years down the line. You're like, oh yeah, remember that thing that was in that book? Yeah.
The obvious Easter egg is right there. But why I did that Easter egg is back to that idea of whiteness appropriating Black Rock. And that's, you know, if you get it, you might think about it, but like, oh, okay, I get it. That's why they did that. And it was also just a cool scene. And I was like, why not reference that other cool scene? You know,
right.
I'm homaging right there. So, but then I was like, oh yeah, I'm definitely jacking it because they jacked us. So give me that. You know, so that was that.
Word. All right. Yeah. No, honestly, I'm hype. Like I'm ready to get this book when it comes out. What's the official
July 31st. Is made 100% close. I'm pretty 100% sure that it's July 31st because we will be at Comic-Con, San Diego Comic-Con the weekend before that, 30th July.
Work.
Holy shit.
Yeah. It's about to drop.
I mean, it was supposed to drop in November, so it's like we are in a, like, last November, so.
Right.
It's been a long time coming, but I'm happy because now we're getting this big push and we're going to be, it's my first time going to San Diego Comic-Con, so.
Yeah,
I'm going to be there, you know, pushing this amazing book. So it should be something.
Right. I mean, that's incredible, man. That's incredible. I love hearing the passion. Like, that's honestly what excites me the most about checking this book out. The passion behind it. You know what I mean? Like, you hear people talk about the reasons why they write books. And by and large, most people are writing because of the love of writing stories. But every once in a while, you get those people, they're just like, oh, yeah, I'm trying to write comics to make. I've met a few of those at conventions. I'm trying to write comics to make money, or I just want to write comics. I'm just like, that's...
Yeah, even when they don't want to make money, I know what you mean. It's like, it becomes very mercenary. Like, I meet a lot of people like that, you know, and that's one of the things that where I, me and Mello even differ. Like, Mello, you know, well, he'll find a way to be passionate about something so he can write on it, you know, and work for it. And he's very good at that. And then he can make some very fire shit while I'm like, if it don't appeal to me, I'm good. You know, I'll go do something else for a while, you know. Like, I watch a lot of Cam and Mace now, and like he's like Cameron, and I'm like Mace. Where I'll vanish for a few years, and then I'll come back around, you know, do some shit, and then I'll vanish for another few years.
Yeah,
and then I'll come back around and do some shit. But yeah, so that's why we work well together. And but like you say, this is something like there's other comments I want to write and shit, but. It's like I got to find that next story where I'm like, oh, yeah, let me, you know, pour my heart and soul into this. Because, I really did pour my heart and soul into this, and it really feels great about it. And, I don't know. It's like I'm like, super anticipatory about it. And then it's like, I don't know what the word to describe that is. It's just... it's kind of like trepidation, but it's more just like, well, you know, let's see what happens.
Right.
That's what I really want to see, because I really want to, you know, I'd like to write more things, and it'll be really interesting when people be like, oh, you know, he wrote this, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I've been waiting for, to be able to be like, you know, well, I have this under my belt, you know.
Right, exactly. And that's a big thing. Honestly, a book like this is huge to have under your belt when you go to put out your other ideas, other stuff you want to write.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, one is Jimi Hendrix.
Right.
Yeah. Like, he's a legend, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
then you're working, you know, the team, the whole team that you're working with is incredible. I believe Titan is a pretty big publisher.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, people are going to get eyes on it. And then when you announce out, they're going to be like, all right, we ready. You know, we ready.
And that's to be interesting, because like, I've never had that, you know, I've never, like I said, even in Hollywood, I've never had anything out where it was like, oh, this was out and you did this and we like this. So, you know, would you like to work on this? Or, you know, what do you think about this? And that type of stuff. And that's what I'm, you know, I'm really looking forward to. And yeah, I got more ideas. So let's do it.
Yeah, I'm glad you got the opportunity, and you guys did it. Y'all executed.
Man.
Yeah, y'all.
So
real quick before we close out here, anything you want to talk about? Anything? What have you been reading lately? Any comics you've been reading? I know you said you're behind on comics, but have you read anything recently? Or,
well, I want to shout out Noir Stories from Black Creators. God, it's right in front of me, but it's Joe, I know Joe has a story in it.
Yeah, the new Noir's New Black. That's the new, this is an expanded edition of the Noir's New Black.
Yep.
And Joe Illich has, he has the new
Noir's New Black. Yep.
Right.
I basically bought the same book twice. Thanks, Joe.
Right.
Mr. Joe got a story in it. I bought this book again.
Right.
Well, I've got the original Andy expanded. And that's another book that's my fault for not reading it the first time, because then I don't want to know. But
honestly, I'm like, I have a stack of books behind me. This pile up, you know.
It's so bad. But like, okay, whatever I have been reading lately is, well, I just read book-wise, The City We Became, N.K. Jemisin's series. It's a series about the avatars of cities, people becoming the avatars of cities.
Right.
And that was the first one in that. I enjoyed that. That was pretty solid.
Mm-hmm.
I've been reading X-Men throughout the whole Krakoa run. I think this is one of my favorite runs of X-Men ever.
Great.
Yeah, I'm really sad to see it end. I also feel like it's going out sad, and I'm kind of disgusted about that. Like,
yeah, it's kind of sad. Yeah,
I feel like they're rushing it to move on to whatever's next. And I'm like, if whatever's next ain't that fire, why are you doing it? And I just have a fear that whatever's next ain't gonna be that fire.
Yeah, we kind of get hurt by the machine a little bit, because like the editorial machine is like, hey, we got to get this out so that we can start this next thing, whatever it is.
Yeah.
The machine just kind of pushes stuff along. And it's a little painful for us as the audience and the readers or whatever. But
that's something that I know I'm tooting my own horn, but I thought I really like writing Hendrix, and what we wrote there is that it's its own universe. It's completely new characters, all this stuff. And so it's not beholden to some, you know, corporate storytelling. And
right, yeah,
that really bothers me about X-Men right now. Like, if they go back to the mansion or do anything like that, I'm just gonna be like, dog, like,
yeah, like what do you even do after something?
I get this stuff to follow this Krakoa shit, but it's like, keep it moving, do, you know, figure it out. It's tough because it's dope. Don't go back to what we've done before. Like,
right, exactly. And it's a little sad. It's very, I mean, I remember when House of X first dropped.
Yeah.
And I remember getting the book and reading I opened the first two pages.
Oh my God.
And then I was like, and then I closed it.
Yeah.
I closed it and I immediately was like, did I miss something?
Right.
Right. That was my first thought. I was like, they crawling out of the eggs. I didn't even know what they were at the time.
Yeah.
And I was like, what did I, and I was like, why does Xavier look like the Maker from,
so I was, and I hadn't been reading X-Men, you know, like for years.
Right.
And so people tell me, like, when you were reading it, it was even more drastic, because it was like one issue, something was happening, and then the next issue it was this shit. And but so I felt the same way. I picked it up. I was like, oh, so was there, you know, is there prior issues to this? And people were like, nah, fam, this is just how it starts. And,
right.
You know, jump right in here and keep going. And then it was like, this is the best shit I've read since, you know, and it made me go back and read so many old X-Men stories that I hadn't read.
Hey, man, see, that's because I felt like I haven't felt so. Obviously, you reading thousands of comics and me also reading like comics, you know, since I was a child. I get a little jaded, a little bit. Like, it's like, you know, like Marvel DC stuff. I get a little bit jaded. Yeah. Like, okay, I know the formula of events. Mm-hmm. I get, you know, all the editorial that you got to cross over and read this one shot over here. And then, like, I'm a little bit jaded, but that was the first time in a long time that I was excited on my lunch break at work, like, oh, the new House of X just dropped. You know, even the House and Powers is going back and forth. And that was the first time I felt like, I can't think of any other time in my adult life reading like a Marvel or DC comic where I felt like a kid again. I was like really excited to get the next issue. Some Image comics, some indie
comics. Image comics, yeah.
Like, but not Marvel and DC. So,
no.
That was an experience, yeah.
It really was. That, and you're right. Like, even something like, which I love, which it was a different level, was like Immortal Hulk. When that was rolling, that was like, I can't believe what I'm getting every issue. But it wasn't like a kid. It was like, this shit was terrifying at the time.
Right.
It was more like, I can't believe
true horror.
I can't believe this is coming out. I can't believe how good this is.
Yeah.
I can't believe how horrified I am by this.
Mm-hmm.
So that was that. I really like, anything Al Ewing writes. Like, I like his Immortal Thor right now. I really like that Avengers Incorporated and they canceled that. Like, very quickly. I really like this, but I guess nobody else did. And so, his Defenders joint was crazy. Anything Al writes, man. Al and Kieran are like my two of my North Stars in comics.
For real.
I'm enjoying Eve's Black Panther.
Mm-hmm. I'm not caught up on that yet.
Yeah, I'm not caught up, but what I've read, I've been enjoying.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been searching for like a new Image or a new, like something, like I gave up on Saga, you know, like, I just don't care anymore.
You know? it was a long time. We had a very long break.
Yeah. And once Man's, you know, caught the L, I was done.
But yeah, he caught the L and then we had to sit on it for so long.
Like, I just didn't care anymore. I was like, I bought the next two graphic novels and haven't read them. But I'm just like, more people, he's going to introduce more people and he's going to make them catch L's. You know, I know you, Brian, came on. Like, I get it, bro. I'm good. So I need something like that. Like, I need a new Invincible, a new Wicked and Divine. I haven't had a book like that. That's oh man, listen, like, you know, we here another hour and change,
right?
I was a Young Avengers fanatic, and then when they started that, I stood in line at Comic-Con and like made them sign this shit, and then, you know, like attached myself to their hip to the point that we're friends now. And I love them dudes, Jamie and Karen, and my man on Color and Matt, you know, like,
right.
I went to the Wicked Divine rap party at Comic Con. Like,
oh, wow, that's dope.
Oh, God, it was, man. Al Ewing was DJing, you know, it was great. It was like that, those are my people, man. And like, for them to be as great people, you know, as they are creators is another thing that I really love. Cause once I got to know them and they're like just really great people, like, that's something. I want to shout out Saladin Ahmed Star Signs because I bought the first issue. Oh, and then I got one more because I bought the first issue, read it, loved it. And then I've got all the issues and I'm just waiting for, I think there's one more. So I'm just waiting for that to drop so I can just, you know, read the whole series at once. But
right.
Love Saladin, love everything he does. Mm-hmm. And then the Oddly Whatever Life of Christopher Chaos is my fucking book right now.
Chaos, hold on.
Yes.
That one. That's a new one.
The Oddly Pedestrian Life of Christopher Chaos.
Yeah.
Ooh, Lord.
who's publishing that one?
That's Image. No, Dark Horse. Dark Horse by James Tynion. And
Oh, I'm in. I'm already in.
I don't know what else James has written. I know he's the man, but I'm not sure what I've read. I'm sure I've read something of his, but I'm not sure.
I I slept on Tinian because I saw his name around, and I think I remember like running into like some of his Batman stuff and some.
It was great,
but I didn't really like. You know, it was like I'm just reading Batman. I don't know. I didn't really.
Yes.
But then, What was it that I picked up? I picked up Something's Killing the Children.
People have been talking about that, man. I read that one.
I picked it up, and my wife was like, why would you want to read a book called Something is Killing
the Children? Yeah, that title's fucking crazy.
And I was like, well, the title is why I picked it up, because it's a crazy title.
It's like when I saw The Walking Dead on the shelf, and I was like, whoa.
Right.
Like, yeah. What a name.
So I said, Something is Killing the Children. I'm like, I got to know what this, I know it sounds morbid, but I got to know what's going on in it. And then it hit me. I was like, wait. And then I went and looked at Department of Truth, and I read the first issue of that. And then I looked at Nice House on the Lake, and I was like, yo, Tinian is a sleeper. Like, he's big, but I feel like people don't talk about him. And he's like this man is a goat. Like,
he just launched some new platform. I know you got my homie Jocelyn involved in, and anything she does always serves the gold, so...
Right.
The Oddly Pedestrian Life of Christopher Chaos, and it's art by, once again, my boy, Isaac Goodhart, who's a good friend of mine.
Okay.
And Isaac, I've known for years now, and the way I've told him this, the way he's developed as an artist is just crazy to me, because he was at one level, and then he just keeps leveling up. And on Christopher Chaos, he's just doing some of the illest shit. And that's it's just right. The last book in general. It's very weird. It's creepy. It's dark. It's funny. It's just everything. I might be searching for, I don't know how long this is going to go on, but right now it's like on issue 5 or so. I know it's a hit, but I'm not sure how long they have it, you know, how long their story's planned for, but I love that book. So.
Absolutely. Yeah. Always good to get like good, more comic recommendations because.
Oh man. Yeah. I'm so glad I got to talk about that because I almost forgot. And that's such a.
Right. Right. Yeah. 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 The Christopher Kelly. I mean, honestly, you mentioned Tinian. I'm in. Like at this point, after reading his stuff, I'm in on anything that man writes. Like he's just incredible. And it's also like my kind of like it. I feel like it aligns with the way that I aspire to write in a way. You know what I mean?
Christopher Kelly's got that weird shit in it where I'm like, wow. Like, and like. I know we did some weird shit like that in Hendrix, and I'm like, oh, okay, you know, that's...
Yeah, yeah.
I'm like, you know, well, you know, this, yeah, maybe this will work out, you know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's the thing about comics. Comics could be weird. Like, there's, like, almost no limit to comics. I'm seriously almost no limit. Like, I'm reading this book called The American Comics right now, which is basically the history of comic.
Mm.
And yeah, people have written everything. Like they had no, like at a certain point where the Comics Code Authority had to come in, at a certain point. And honestly, they were just censoring comic voices. That's not the way I feel about it anyways. But yeah, like people were writing basically whatever they felt, and comics is like the medium, unlike any other medium where you can really do that and nobody can really tell you no, you know, you can do whatever you want. So yeah, like if it's some weird stuff you wanna put in a page, do it. That's saga. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Definitely. That was like I said, because like this is a Hendrix is a lot of space opera. So I took that to heart. Like I was like, you know, anything that popped in my head. And like I said, this is one character. I don't know what the fuck, where they came from. And there's some other stuff I showed to my boy, and he was like, oh, you've been reading this and that. And I was like, no, I haven't, but I think I was watching this, and I'm not going to say what, but
yeah.
I think that might have inspired that, but I'm like, oh, what you said is even dope, and that is connecting that, and that does work for that, and that's what Tom Drew was from that inspiration. But this other one I'm talking about before that I mentioned before that I can't believe I got on, I still don't, it just popped in my head one day. It's like, why not have a character who looks like, and I was like, in Google, I almost got that, and I can't think of that in the comic, and I can't think of that in the movie. All right, fuck it, let's do it. And right. You know, so it's just stuff like that, and I kept running with that feeling. Like if it popped in my head, I was like, let's make it work somehow.
That's what's so great about the writing process too. Is like sometimes themes come to you, in the weirdest way. It's like it may be an idea that you saw in a movie, but it's not really that idea. But then your friend sets up that it made you think of this color.
Yeah.
And now that color made you think of something else. And all of a sudden you got this thing that's just brand new on the page. The writing process is just, it's incredible. I mean, man, we got into it, man. I'm excited about this interest book. I know everybody who's listening to this. I know y'all are excited. Where can people find you on the social medias, on the internet?
They can find me pretty much everywhere on every different social at DJ Ben. I mean, that's DJ Ben Hamen. Mm-hmm. At DJ Ben Amin on pretty much everything. I think TikTok, it's the DJ Ben Amin, because I got locked out of my original one. I can't remember how to get in. And then I also have Full On Nerds. You can find me on that every week with me and my partner Titana on all the major platforms. Right. I've launched my DJ site, which is bigdjenergy.com. So that's pretty much to be where I'm gonna have all my creative energies, put together. You'll be able to get the books on there as well, but it's just in a beta form right now. You can go and leave your email and we'll send you some free shit. So bigdjenergy.com, that's going on, and that's pretty much it. DJ Ben Amin, For All Nerds, and Big DJ Energy is where you can find me.
Awesome And you're doing producing and whatnot.
I've released two remixes, two official unofficial remixes on Bandcamp, some house music. I've been going heavy into producing house music. So I've got a Beyonce remix of Virgo's Groove that's really fucking fire, and a Childish Gambino Feels Like Summer remix that's fire, and I'm gonna drop. I'm working on putting out a couple more. I was working on doing one a month, but 2024 has been a little rough, so I plan to get a couple more out pretty soon, though. So go to DJ Ben Amin on Bandcamp as well, and DJ Ben Amin on SoundCloud, and you can listen to them all there. I've got some edit packs and some other stuff on there as well.
Dope. Yeah, I need Instagram to get right, because I was trying to add your music to Reels, and it lets you add them, but it's like they cut it really short, and I'm like,
I didn't know how to do it. I usually make my own video and then put it on there, because I don't know how to get my music where it's unofficial remixes as of now. Once I start doing my own production, I'll be able to have it on there, but for now it's just
Right. And and even though it's supposed to be set up to the, if your music is on there, which is under your name, like I can go to your video and use audio, but I can't go search it. I'm like, oh,
come on. I don't know.
Awesome stuff. So, of course, everybody, you can find the podcast at Beyond the Fourth Wall. If you search Beyond the Fourth Wall, that's IVWALL. Fourth is in the Roman numeral. It's on all major streaming services. You'll find it on Spotify, iTunes, or is it Apple Music now? Apple Music. It'll be YouTube Music or YouTube Podcasts soon. I believe Google Podcasts is going away at some point. But yeah, you can find it on all iHeartRadio, all major streaming services. So you'll be able to listen to this, and you'll also be able to find this video on YouTube later, so you'll be able to get the full stream on YouTube. So be on the lookout for that. But but for the time being, that's all we got. Thank you guys for listening in, and we'll catch y'all next time.
Peace.